Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour. Ton to get to. We're going to hit a producer six-pack here in a second with Big O. Maybe we'll talk a sport other than football. Or maybe he has four straight football questions for me, which would be just fine. Can't talk enough football this time of year. We are rip-roaring and ready to go. Dove headfirst into the season. Oh, before we get to your six-pack, can you remember a week one in college and NFL that delivered as big as this year? We got smashing results in college and the NFL for both week ones. It's been awesome.
It's going to keep being that way, I think, in college football as conferences move to that nine-game schedule. You're going to see less of those
Austin Peay's
and Marshall's and more of the interconference matchups, the Clemson's.
Because even if it was just like Kentucky, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like let's say they move up conference play to account for the extra game,
mm-hmm.
and they started in week two. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
Because at least you'd have a reason to watch.
Like, that's true.
Like, what? I didn't watch the game. I'm not going to lie. Like, I went back and watched the YouTube package to see how the offense and the defense looked.
If you're not a fan of those schools, it's a tough draw to just kind of bring in the casual fan to watch that game.
There were just more important games for a national relevance perspective on during that window that I decided to watch. Because if you remember, they moved up the game.
Yeah, because
so the
weather.
It started at 2:15. They still had a delay.
It's 10 delay, yeah.
But that was right in the middle of the noon window. So I'm watching more important games to be sorry, dog fans. But, like, you know, if it got dicey, of course I would have turned it on. But
yeah. Never was a dicey moment. It wasn't runaway game that we hoped it would be.
I was about
to
say, they didn't look amazing. So much so to the point where you're starting to hear a little bit of chirping about what can happen against Tennessee.
That line, which started at, what, 6.5, has dropped down to 3.5 now. So even, Vegas and the bettors are seeing something, too, I guess, with this.
Tennessee's quarterback,
Joey Aguilar, man,
looks pretty good.
For he might not have the overall skill level of a Nico Iamaleava.
Well, based on the way Nico's
that's maybe not saying a whole lot, too, if they're UCLA. But he is the fit for what Josh Heupel wants to do with that spread offense, and if they run the football the way they're running the football right now, throw four times a game and they'll still be successful.
And that's the other issue, too, is does Georgia's defensive line still have the dogs? Literally, pun intended. Oren, I don't know if you know this, but we're from California. It's us and it's USC.
Oh, yeah. The two great programs there, yes. Just really happy to be here,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I'm just happy to be here.
Just really happy to be here.
Any questions? It's still one of the funniest press conferences you'll ever hear in your entire life. Yeah, I know a lot of you don't know much.
We're just excited. You know, I'm sure you guys don't know too much about UCLA, but our football program, but we're in L.A.
Oh,
I think that's
God.
What the L.A. part of UCLA
it's
signifies, yes.
I'm just excited to be here, man.
Yeah.
And I'll take any questions.
Any questions.
So good. All right.
Oh, Deshaun.
Oh, boy. 404-726-0929. College fans, have no fear. We'll talk college ball coming up in 10 minutes with our buddy Joe DeLeon, one of my favorite college football insiders. I'm not worried, but, like, I'm not envisioning a cakewalk either for Georgia. We'll see what Joe thinks about it. I think it's going to be a good game, but I think it's going to be a lot tougher than I think a lot of people imagine.
Crazy part about this series is that in recent years, Georgia has owned this thing, and more specifically, Josh Heupel is. I don't think he scored a point in the last two matchups in the second half of both of those ball games.
Is that right?
I don't think so.
That's a good stat. Here's my question, though, Does Georgia have that type of defense anymore? I don't think they do.
Well, defense last year wasn't exactly a world beater either, and they held Tennessee scoreless in the second half of last year. So it's – I am more apt to believe that Georgia's defense can get the job done as opposed to last year's defense. a lot of youth right now. Kirby talked about that before, how, you know, the majority of this football team is young.
And
but
the damn youth don't like to be coached hard.
And no, they don't want to be coached hard. You don't coach them hard at all. But it's been fun these first couple weeks watching that defense fly around and get to the football.
Yeah, I mean, listen, is there a good chance like KJ Bolden does what he's been doing? And yeah, sure. I'm not worried. I just think at the beginning of the year, I would have thought this would have been much like how I now feel about the Vikings game for the Falcons. I'm just, my eyebrows are a little further up the burrow and the brow than they were a couple of weeks ago. That's
Tennessee in the last three matchups versus Georgia. So I'm going all the way back to 2022, Stetson's last year. Okay. They scored 7 points in the second half of that ball game.
Mm-hmm.
They scored 0 points in the second half in 24.
Mm-hmm.
I mean 23, and then 0 points in the second half of 24.
Well,
so Kirby has shut them out in the second half of the last two ball games. And that was one of those in Neyland too.
Well, your lips to the big man's ears, that trend becomes, what would that be, 4 years in a row now?
Let's hope so.
7 points in 4 years in the second half?
Just do the same thing that you've been doing, guys, over and over again.
That's a good kind of insanity.
Oh, and then 7 points in the second half of the 2021 matchup. So
in
the past 4 years,
they've
scored 14 points in the second half of ball games.
That's a great stat right there. All right, let's see what else you got in a producer six-pack.
Speaking of two teams that played college football over the weekend and were disappointing, Texas struggled in their matchup. Clemson struggled in their matchup.
Just, is Arch hurt? That's a rumor that's going on right now.
If you ask Sark that, he talks about how I don't film you or watch you when you go to the bathroom and you do things in the bathroom. So Sark took that question kind of personally.
And I took that personally.
I guess nobody's supposed to ask about the well-being of Arch until Sark makes it known that there is something to be concerned about.
If you missed it, by the way, there's a viral video clip going on of Arch making several throws where it looks like
a grimace.
In order to throw the ball, he has to dislocate his shoulder and put it back in each time.
It's a grimace.
That is the type of pain he appears to be in when trying to throw the ball. But Sark says, nah, that's just him throwing the ball, man.
Yeah, just missed a couple reads to Ryan Wingo, and he was upset, and he got bad footwork, and that's why, you know, the ball kind of sidearmed on him. Yeah. That.
But we're fine. Everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
It's like the dog in the house that's everything's burning. Right?
Everything. This is fine.
Yeah.
This is fine.
Just fine.
This is okay.
All right.
Texas and Clemson. Which one of those schools loses the ball game first?
No.
Excuse me. Let me rephrase that. Which one of them loses a ball game next?
Clemson. Because I think Georgia Tech has a shot. I'm not going to lie. I don't know if I'll be as ballsy on Thursday as I am right now.
Got to get a healthy Haynes King in that game, man. We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, I'm going to go Clemson. I think Texas figures it out. Their defense is too talented. So Clemson, you know, if Cade isn't Cade, I think they're in more trouble than if Arch isn't Arch. Because I like Texas's defense. Clemson's got a good defense, too.
They do.
But I like Texas's defense more than Clemson's defense. So I'm going to say Texas can hold up in the SEC more than Clemson can in the ACC, as ironic as that sounds. But I'm going to go Clemson.
All right. Question number two, sir. It was announced this week that Sean Murphy's going to have some hip surgery for an issue that had been around for a while. And
how about 3 years?
3 years. They attempted to try to, you know, use alternative methods, I guess, or other ways to alleviate the pain.
What, do you go visit Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, get some ayahuasca and rub some leaves on it or something. But none of that worked. So now he has to have surgery. He's going to be out for the next 4 months. Your level of concern now about Sean Murphy in the 2026 baseball season?
Well, here's my honest opinion. I thought they should have traded him in the offseason. To help, because their pitching staff is just in shambles, both sides, the bullpen and the starting rotation. So he's a guy that I thought you could have gotten a lot of value for because he's played pretty well. In August, he played pretty well, not so much in September so far. But now you got to just keep him. Whatever my concern is almost doesn't matter at this point.
It's negligible.
You're not going to trade a guy coming off a surgery.
Nobody's going to want a guy that's coming off a surgery either, yes.
So I'm going to say it's minimal, but I'm going to say it also really doesn't matter.
Question number three. Was announced that Jalen Carter, because of the nature of his ejection happening at the beginning of that ball game, is going to be docked that game check of $57,000, and no other suspension is going to occur. Right or wrong, that punishment as it was. The game check going bye-bye
his
and no other suspensions.
Can't just be $57,000, is it?
$57,000, yeah. Huh. That's the game check for
Interesting, him. Okay. Let me ask you this. Do you believe Dak spit first?
Oh, Dak definitely spit first. Now, it's debatable about the direction that the spit was going, but Dak.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, do you believe he spit in the direct? Like, was he the first one to intentionally spit?
Whether he intentionally spit at him or not, you spit enough in that guy's direction to where he was like, hey, are you spitting on me? So, you know, just because, you know, it's accidental, you don't mean for it to be intentional. Somebody's going to take it that way. So whether Dak meant for it to be intentional or not.
He's got to learn to control his spit radius.
You got to spit closer to home on that one, buddy.
The spit radius is too high. Yeah, I'm fine with it because it's pretty clear what happened, right? This is pretty open and shut. He says he's never going to do it again. Everyone, didn't you love everybody on Twitter? See? That's why he fell in the – see? That's why he fell in the trap. Be quiet. He got spit off first. All right? Let's be clear about that. Dak Prescott, I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you meddling Twitter sleuths. You know, like, he got caught. He got exposed. So I'm fine with it. I don't think he needs more punishment. Now, if he does it again, maybe give him a couple of games.
Yeah, he didn't learn.
But you better learn. Better learn, Mr. Carter.
Question number four. I won't ask about the AL, but we'll stick in the NL right now. It's two teams that are sort of running away with everything, and that would be the Brewers and the Phillies. Are those two the teams to beat right now in the National League?
To be the champs, you got to beat the champs. The Dodgers pitching staff right now, pretty good.
With two near no-hitters?
Yeah. Glasnow, they have like four aces, but they're never healthy.
At the same time, yeah.
And they also have like four closers who are also never healthy at the same time. I just feel, you know what I think is going to happen? I think we're going to have a rematch of last year, and I think it's going to be really boring.
Yankees and Dodgers again?
Yeah, that's how it feels to me.
Well, there's no Nestor Cortez to give up a grand slam, a walk-off grand slam early, so.
I forget what team he's on now. I don't even remember.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You know what's crazy about that, too? I know nobody cares here, but just a little anecdote if you remember that, if you were watching last year.
He put off surgery on his arm to pitch in the World Series.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, was he wasn't the guy that was supposed to go in. They had a lefty reliever. His name was Tim Hill, who had like a 0.5 ERA on the season. But Aaron Boone, in his infinite wisdom, said, let's bring in Nestor Cortez, a starter, instead, to pitch to Hall of Famer Freddie Freeman.
Who has been just tearing it up that postseason already.
And then the rest, as they say, is history. All right, a couple more. We'll do a little rapid fire here.
All righty. Debate here, sir. Do you wait to watch television shows with your significant other? Yes or no?
No, that is not something that we currently do.
Okay.
That would be something I would have to do if we did, though.
Okay.
I would not be allowed to free will it.
You'd have to wait.
I'd have to wait, and there would be heck to pay if I didn't. I can just tell you that right now.
Understood. And last one, weekend plan, sir, because we will not have Producer Sixpack, and this is kind of our one more full day after this. So your weekend plans.
We only get now one Producer Sixpack a week. It's a sad thing, but it's a good thing. I am going to Saturday. I'll be here doing a show in the afternoon. Sunday evening, and this is a great segue, Oren. How about this? On Sunday evening, join 92.9 The Game and Bud Light for a Falcons vs. Vikings Sunday Night Football watch party this Sunday at 8 p.m. at Hobnob Neighborhood Tavern in Atlantic Station. Watch the Falcons battle the Vikings with Yours truly, Chris Turtle Thomas, Freddie Falcon, and the Falcons cheer team. Compete in Bud Light's football toss competition to win an all-inclusive trip to Vegas for two to compete for Super Bowl tickets. Win Falcons tickets or an autographed Falcons item. And, of course, great specials on Bud Light. That's the Falcons versus the Vikings watch party Sunday, September 14th at Hobnob in Atlantic Station. Must be 21 plus, and please drink responsibly. Great job, Bo, on the six-pack. We'll check in with our buddy Joe DeLeon. What does he think about the Dogs? Is he worried about Tennessee? We'll find out next on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle, with you till 10. Is there anything to be concerned about going into Tennessee week with Georgia's offense? I'm not sure. So let's bring in an expert. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock. Joe DeLeon of A to Z Sports. Joe, in your opinion, not exactly a dynamite performance against a far inferior opponent last weekend. Did anything strike you to be concerned about with Georgia's offense over the first 2 weeks?
No, the big reason why I'm not overly concerned is you got two games, one against an FCS opponent, one against Marshall. How are we to expect that both of those performances are Mike Bobo, Gunnar Stockton, really opening things up and doing what they're going to do during their SEC stretch? It feels like those are just instances where they're trying to get in and out, trying to establish a simple rhythm and move on to the important game that's coming this week against Tennessee. I'm not overly worried. I will be worried if against Tennessee there is the same lack of aggressiveness, the same issue of him not throwing Gunnar Stockton throwing past the sticks. If that stuff shows up in the first quarter, first half, then I'd start to have some concerns because it'll mean that they're probably hanging around really closely with Tennessee.
How hot is Billy Napier's seat after what happened?
Oh, man, incredibly. The big issue that comes now with Billy Napier is that he has a gauntlet of a schedule. South Florida was supposed to be one of the warm-up games, and it was a game that they needed for DJ Lagway also to get his groove back after he missed a good bit of the preseason. I don't know how he is going to fix this. He would need for South Florida to end up being the G5 representative in the college football playoff, which is very likely. This team is phenomenal. This is no Northern Illinois from last year. I think that this team's better than last year's Boise State team. They got a good D-line. They are physical. They will hit. But I think that for him, he's got to hope that that happens. And Napier also needs to still go 9-3 this season. And I think that that is going to be really hard for him to accomplish with matchups with Alabama, with Georgia. It is going to be a really, really tough stretch for them to get through.
Speaking of Alabama, I know it was against UL Monroe, but did you see enough explosion from that offense to course correct at least a little bit?
I'm not really capping in on how they did against UL Monroe. I mean, it was nice to see Ty Simpson have some confidence. It's nice to see Keelan Russell have a couple of plays, the true freshman who's uber talented. But I feel like a lot of times we get these get right games against these bad teams, but they're never really a true indicator of how they're going to perform once they get back to their high level of competition. What I always love to point to is Tennessee last year with Nico. They were unstoppable against Kent State and the FCS opponent that they played. And then they ended up starting to struggle. They had a little bit of an inconsistent game against NC State, and then the whole rest of the year in the SEC, they were nothing but riddled with problems, and Nico was timid, and he was making mistakes. So I got to see how this Alabama squad is going to do this weekend against Wisconsin, see if they're going to be able to carry over what they showed us against UL Monroe, and I think they'll have a pretty easy time because this Wisconsin team is really rough. But once they open up SEC play, it's going to be the real barometer of, hey, have they fixed the woes that plagued them early on?
You mentioned South Florida. They get Miami on the road, 18.5-point dog. Based on the way that they performed and what you mentioned earlier, I think that seems a little high. I still think Miami will win, but I think South Florida gives them a battle.
I think that they will, and I think that that line's so big that I might be willing to take them to cover. But the one thing for me that I feel like Miami will at least win this thing confidently, at least by 10 points. I think it's going to be really similar to the Fiesta Bowl between Boise State and Penn State last year, where you knew that Penn State was the better team, but at the end of the day, Ashton Jensen was good enough of an athlete to keep the game close. I think for this matchup, though, specifically, Byron Brown is a fantastic athlete. They have a lot of really speedy receivers. They have some solid defensive linemen, as I mentioned earlier. The difference with Miami, though, this year specifically, is they've shown to me that they're a much better tackling team. New defensive coordinator Corey Heatherman comes in, and he is really focused on fundamentals. It really, really was visible against Notre Dame. I think that when you're facing off against a quarterback like Byron Brown, who's super elusive and has also been a tremendous passer, he's got one of the best streaks in the country of completions without an interception this year. He's got no interceptions or turnovers this year. I think that if they're able to rally to the football and swarm to the football, they shouldn't have any problems, and they should win this game by 10 or more points.
All right. Texas A&M has a what percentage chance to effectively put a big wall between Notre Dame and a college football playoff?
Well, if they win this game, I think that there's a 100% chance. If Texas A&M beats Notre Dame, that completely boxes Notre Dame out of getting in. This year, the college football playoff has emphasized that strength of schedule is incredibly important for them. They're going away from what we saw last year. And if Notre Dame loses to A&M and they lose to Miami, they'd have to hope that USC is ranked and they stay ranked when they play them. Outside of that, it's like a really light ACC schedule, and they get a game with Arkansas. And Arkansas is not a very good team this year. I think in terms of this game, though, I kind of lean towards Notre Dame having to throw a percentage on it, 55% chance of winning this game. Because we saw some issues in stopping the run for Texas A&M in week one against UTSA, they gave up 174 yards rushing to UTSA's lead running back. I think they're more deliberate. Notre Dame's more deliberate about leaning on Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love, and they start to just establish that identity that we know that they had in the past. They're going to be fine. But what can really scare Notre Dame and why Texas A&M has a real shot to win this ball game, so they've got really speedy receivers, Braver and Concepcion. They are the types of guys that will give them fits, just like Malachi Toney did of Miami. And on top of this, Marcel Reed's really good extending the pocket. And Notre Dame's pass rush right now has kind of left a lot to be desired. Depending on what defensive coordinator Chris Ash does, if he's not aggressive, it could be a really tough day for that Notre Dame defense that's supposed to be a serious strength for them.
If Haynes King is fully healthy and ready to go, how does Georgia Tech beat Clemson?
I think that they, if he's fully healthy and ready to go at home, there is a very strong chance that they pull it off. Because we saw in week one for Clemson that they struggled to tackle Aaron Anderson. They struggled to tackle on Caden Durham. You have Jamal Haynes, who I love and is super shifty. He's a space killer. He is more explosive than Caden Durham in my eyes. So there's a chance that he could pop off. But having Haynes King is the most important part, because we've seen the stark difference in performance when this team doesn't have King out there. From what I was reading this morning, when I was preparing notes for my show today and previewing this game, it sounds like there's a belief that he is going to be fast and he's going to be fine. But knowing the health inconsistency with King, I don't know what fully healthy really is for him. If he is a little banged up and he's limited, it could be the one big detraction for this team that holds them back, because Clemson's loaded on defense, and if Kate Klubnik can kind of figure out his problems and start to connect with his guys, they should be able to separate.
Yeah, I was just about to ask, do you think this has the potential to be the Kate Klubnik gets everything right and figures it out game?
I think it is, because I think this team has to have urgency. I think that Dabo is smart enough, and he's always done this, especially over the past couple of years when they've had problems and they've had a challenge like Georgia Tech. They have realized, okay, we got to lock in, we got to fix this. Like the one that sticks in my head is the Notre Dame game that they had a couple of years ago, and everyone was calling him dead and done, that there was no way for him to survive that year. And they lock in and they come all after Sam Hartman, and they're able to fluster him. I think that the same thing applies here, where the defense is been good, but needs to be better and needs to play great containing against Haynes King. But then the offensive side of the ball, we know that Kate Klubnik can be phenomenal. He had so many great games last year. His touchdown interception ratio was fantastic. He needs to get back to that version of himself, and I think the urgency is going to motivate him.
What do you make of the Michigan coaching situation? It's getting a lot of funny memes and play online.
Biff Poggi is a great guy. I love that that he's stepping in here for Michigan, and then he's getting another chance to do that. I was disappointed that he got let go as Charlotte's head coach, but the whole thing is ridiculous. I kind of wish that there was some sort of responsibility and integrity for Michigan to have held out Sherrone Moore for the actual first three games of the season instead of plugging in Biff Poggi for this random stretch of games that he's going to be coaching for. But they're going to be fine coming off of this game against Oklahoma. I think that there's going to be plenty of freshman bumps that come with Bryce Underwood as they're starting to find ways for that passing game to get activated that doesn't really have any receiving weapons. But they gotta really figure out those issues and figure out who those playmakers are with this stretch of bad opponents that they have for the next few weeks.
What do you make of the change in the transfer portal window?
Yeah, I'm not really surprised because I feel like that this is something that we've been working towards for some time now. I think that having more continuity and having like a more established, consistent plan going forward is going to help the sport. I don't know if the exact timeline is the best possible timeline for this to work, but at the end of the day, if they're actually putting an attention to detail to adjusting it, I think that that's how we start to resolve some of the problems. Because when we have the two windows and then you have this opportunity to go and steal guys in the spring the way that they were doing it, I think it became you know really, really convoluted. So I think that the current changes can be a step in the right direction.
Well, let me propose this to you. How about a week after the season ends? Like just instead of right on the tippy-toe line to when the season ends.
Well, the problem with that, and I agree with you, I mean, like in a vacuum, if this was an NFL calendar, yeah, it would make a lot more sense. But the problem is that the academic calendar, and they're supposed to be students first, which doesn't really apply anymore. I think that you have to find a way for that to be the priority. They're transferring schools. You've got most of these kids are not going out playing the NFL. They're transferring for academic purposes. You can't start classes 2 weeks in, 3 weeks into a semester. What really should happen is that week zero should be week one, and they should maybe even consider moving up the start of the season an additional week earlier. I think that that's where the problem comes from. If the season ended instead of like right around when NFL playoffs are happening, if it ended around New Year's, I think that would be a lot better.
Yeah, I think they're like if you're going to go that close up to the line, just go over it, I guess, is really what you're coming down to at this point. Joe, appreciate it. As always, we'll chat again soon as the season progresses. We'll check you out on A to Z Sports. Thanks.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is our good buddy there, Joe DeLeon. When we get back, let's take a brief shift into the world of baseball because the newly trim Alex Anthopoulos joined the Steakhouse earlier today and answered all the tough questions about the state of the Braves. And then right back into football to kick off the 9 o'clock hour. Want to remind you to join Dukes and Bell this Thursday at Buffalo's Cafe and coming for a special broadcast. We'll be getting ready for Thursday night's NFL game, plus looking ahead to the weekend's college and pro football action. That's Thursday at Buffalo's Cafe and coming on 92.9 The Game. Of the 9 o'clock hour, Brian Snicker did something pretty cool. And, you know, in a season where there's not a lot to highlight from the Braves, I guess, you know, you do want to accentuate the positives. And it is ironic that he gets his 800th win, Oren, and then a conversation about his job security for next year breaks out one sentence after the other. But that's what it is. So here's Snit talking about 800 wins and everything that it means to him.
You know what? It means a lot. I never thought I'd get one, let alone 800. So I've been surrounded by really good players for 10 years, so that's a byproduct of that. You know, I think about Bobby every time I'm in this dugout. Every before I go out to the ballpark or for the game, how much I miss him coming in and having that visit every day.
And Ronnie?
I'm sorry?
And Ronnie?
And Ronnie, yeah. Well, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be doing this right now, I'll tell you that. I mean, she's the reason that I've been around for almost 50 years. And love her to death and my family. And you know, they're the reason I'm here.
Yeah, so really cool stuff there for Snit. Unfortunately, on the back end of it, if you missed it earlier, Sean Murphy out for the year with a injury that's been plaguing him for 3 years. Yeah, you heard that one correctly. 3 years. It's a hip, right, Oren? If I'm not mistaken, hip injury. It's just where things are right now, and that brings us to Alex Anthopoulos, because that man has his work cut out for him this offseason. You have to figure out shortstop, if it's going to be Kim or if it's going to be somebody else. You have to figure out what you're going to do with left field. Is it going to be Profar long-term? Is it going to be somebody else? You have to reconstruct the back end of your starting rotation, and you have to completely reconstruct your bullpen. So he joined the Steakhouse today after a fun conversation about how Alex trimmed down 60 pounds, which is impressive, and you could definitely tell. I saw it on the TV yesterday. They got to talking some ball.
We have to talk baseball. We only have 5 minutes. This is going to be the fastest rapid fire. What you said about Brian Snicker, what do you mean that it's almost like it's not your decision, it's Terry's and Brian's, where you are the general manager, and you said he'll be...
Brian's had incredible success. We could just take the big league time since I've been with him. 7 postseason appearances in a row. Just to put that into perspective, you had 14 divisions in a row. You got 2 guys in the Hall of Fame for doing that, obviously in a World Series. After that period, I think we as an organization made the postseason 3 times in a 12-year period. Wow. 2 of those are wild cards. Snit won 6 divisions in a row. 6! 7 postseasons in a row,
yeah,
and a World Series, and a Manager of the Year, and yes, we haven't had a good year. When we did the contract extension 3 years ago, you know, Snit knew with age and this and that. I said, look, we'll revisit it, and we'll cross that bridge, and we'll get there, and so on. But that was the thought back then. We did it in 2022. After 22. We won the World Series in 21, won 101 games in 22, do the extension just because he doesn't know how much longer he wanted to do it. But it's like, okay, let's go another 3 years after 2 incredible years. Then we win 104 games, have the best record in baseball. So this was just talked about a long time ago. So at the end of the day, Snit's part of this organization. He's part of the furniture, part of the fabric, and so on. He's got an expiring contract. He's had that before. He had an expiring contract in 2018. And when I first got here, right? And we talked at the end of the year, and we're going to talk at the end of the year, whenever it is. Obviously, we're going to have a conversation. He's part of this thing going forward. So I just don't think it's fair for me to discuss. You know, people are asking me, what do you think? Should he be celebrated? Should this, that? That's not my business. Right. You know, he's got way more years in baseball. He's part of this place. He's a Braves Hall of Famer, clearly. Second most successful manager, and the only reason is because you have a Hall of Famer ahead of him, right? So the success, and look, are we having a great year? Of course not. Have we had issues? Absolutely. Have I been perfect? Has he been perfect? No. When you're not winning, we're all part of it. That's a big part of it. But, you know, this was discussed 3 years ago that, hey, I'm just going to do this deal and kind of revisit and reevaluate. So for me, these are questions for him, and, you know, when that time is appropriate, it's organic and so on. Unfortunately, we're normally preoccupied in the month of October, and the 7 years I've been here prior to this year, we'll have time in October to have that conversation.
Talking to Alex Anthopoulos on the future of Brian Snicker, which sounds like it will be playing itself out over the next few weeks or so. I know it's been a very, very troubling season. Everything that could go wrong at one point felt like it was going on the injury front and everything else. But what do you take away from the next 17 games that are going to be important? And why did you, at the trade deadline, decide to not do much? And I know you talked about value. Why was the value not there for some of your guys?
Yeah, so there's windows and pockets to make deals, right? You have the winter meetings. You have the general manager's meetings. You have the trade deadline. Trade deadline is the best one because it's completely exclusive, right? It's the same way you come into the ballpark or State Farm or Mercedes-Benz and you want to get food or a drink. There's only one place to go shopping, you know, and it's the same thing at the deadline. You got 29 GMs to work with. You can't go to free agency or things like that. So it's a good time to engage. So we had a bunch of conversations about things and things that we might continue exploring into the winter. If there were deals that we thought, even a prospect, you know, that we liked, that we thought, you know, was, I hate saying a real prospect, but a player we thought could impact us in some capacity and help the team, we would have done it. And look, historically, and I'm not saying anything inappropriate in terms of other teams, but in 7 years where we were in the postseason, and if, you know, a lot of the trades we made at the trade deadline, a lot of the deals that we did make were more salary relief. And yes, there were players going out the door, but, you know, the impetus of those deals was for clubs to save money. And, you know, I don't have to go through all of them, but, you know, the prospects we were trading were long shots, flyers, this and that. Those clubs knew that, but you know, they may have been saving $1 million, $2 million, $3 million. And you have to remember, from the majority of these clubs, when they're not successful and they're not making the postseason, attendance is down, turnstile is down, food and beverage, all that stuff is down. So saving a few million dollars is a significant thing. I can tell you from Terry McGuirk, you know, he said, I have no interest in saving money. If there's a baseball trade that makes us better, absolutely. Full sign-off. But if you're telling me all we're doing is salary relief, I just have no interest in doing that. And, yes, could we have dressed up a deal, which GMs will do that all the time. Hey, give me a second guy, give me a third guy, but you know the guy can't play.
Yeah.
We could have done that. You know, we could have done, hey, let's get four guys that are in A-ball that we don't think have a chance to even get on a 40-man, but it'll look like we did a 4-for-1. But if we ultimately don't believe in those players, that didn't make any sense. So we made some asks. You know, some people inquired. We made some asks. We got quick no's, and we didn't think they were aggressive, but we didn't get close at all. So they made it easy on us, so there was just no reason to give players away and dump players. And look, you know, the other component is if we think there's an opportunity where guys might come back, we might sign guys back. You know, that's not, I'm not trying to foreshadow or hint at anything, but you know, there's a lot of players that we like. There's value to having them here as well, but again, not at the expense of a young player or a big league player even that we thought could make the team better. So look, we even explored free agent for free agent deals,
yeah.
You know, where it's like, okay, give me your free agent, you'll take mine. And, you know, but the free agent we targeted was someone that we thought we might keep. So, you know, for example, take a Kim. Clearly we know he has the opportunity to be a free agent, but him being here, being in Atlanta and so on, we believe that going out into the market, if he does opt out, he knows us now better than he yep. would have had we just showed up in November and started talking to him. He knows the clubhouse, he knows the players, he knows the city, the environment, the fan base, all that kind of stuff. So that, in my mind, at minimum should break a tie because this is a great place to play.
No doubt. And he's looked great so far. Hey, we got about 45 seconds left. Very simple question. Not a simple question, but guy in his car wants to hear it. The Braves get back in the mix contending for a World Series. If what? What has to happen to get back on track?
Have to get the rotation back on track. The biggest thing is you'll see is in this 7-year run, and it's hard to use COVID because it was a 60-game sample, so it's just hard to extrapolate that and say you can take this and it's similar to 162. So let's put COVID aside. But basically in 23, we had historic offense. We've pretty much been in the top five in ERA in those 7 years. You know, I think 23, notwithstanding that we were seventh, but our offense was incredible. But we've pitched. And we've had injuries every year. We've had one or two significant injuries on the staff. That's part of it. Ronaldo Lopez, spring training, part of it. You're going to deal with it. A.J. Smith-Sharber, part of it. You're going to deal with it. But once you lose Sale and Schwellenbach, and we've had so many significant – we've had tons of injuries. We know that's going to happen, position players and so on. But you can't overcome, in my view, that many injuries in the rotation and still survive. We're able to recover in 24 from a bunch of injuries from a position player standpoint. So we need to get our rotation back intact. That's been a key to our success, to getting into the postseason, and that will absolutely, unequivocally be the sole and most, not sole, but the key focus for us going into the offseason.
Okay. And here's how we define if that is successful or not. Oren, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Give me your honest answer,
we'll
as
do.
I know
we'll try.
You always do. The Atlanta Braves, this offseason, give out a contract to a single player north of $100 million in total value.
True.
Really?
I think so.
Wow.
Because I think at this point there's no excuse.
You have to.
You have to do it.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking you'd say no. Because that would follow the recent trends.
What do you say, Chris? They better.
They better.
They better.
With a UH at the end of it. That's the problem, man. This team, for the last, what, since the World Series run, really? How many big deals have they given out? I mean, you got the Austin Riley contract, which set the franchise record at like 206 or something like that. Matt Olson's deal. 160?
Sean Murphy's deal.
Not a whole lot either.
He's like 12, 13
yeah,
per,
well,
yeah.
I mean, Ozuna got a, what, $20 million contract?
Even Sale's deal was sort of, it was for what it was great.
Yeah.
Because he's potentially a $30 million a year pitcher. and you're getting him for way less value-wise than that.
You know what's ironic? You know what they need? They need a guy, maybe a lefty, experience, big games, part of a World Series winning team. Guile, smarts on the mound, can strike out lefties and righties. They need a guy who might be pitching in New York right now that was in contention for the Cy Young for most of the year. They need a guy like Max Fried. Now, I'm going to be honest, Oren. I say that tongue-in-cheek. They were never going to give him what the Yankees gave him.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Never, not even close. Years or salary.
No, none of that.
But in all seriousness, they need another, you know, number two-ish type guy that's going to cost you money.
In a name. You don't need to – this isn't about value right now. You need to find a name. A Max Fried type, if you will. Somebody who has – experience in this league, cachet in this league. It needs to be somebody who, not like a Ronaldo Lopez that you're hoping to catch fire with, a former reliever that maybe can throw hard as a starter for a little bit. No, it can't be someone like that. It needs to be a name.
Let me ask you, well, you want some names?
Let's do some names.
Dylan Cease. I think he's too expensive. I don't think they're going to pay him. He's going to command a lot of money. It
would have been nice if they had made that deal a couple years ago, but I don't know if they would have met the White Sox asking price. So
Zach Gallen. Again, I think he's going to be too expensive.
Yeah.
I don't think they would pay. Now, this one's interesting because he's been like an ace-ish the last few years, and he definitely has big game experience. I don't know if I love the cut of his jib. Framber Valdez. He's got the stuff, and he's got the experience.
It's not good for him recently, what's going on with him. He's young-ish, like you said, too. Framber's a guy who I've thought about. I've thought about maybe – I don't know if he's a dude that gets a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year deal wherever he goes his next contract. Maybe he takes 2 or 3.
Would you pay the guy that has been the ultimate – thorn in your side, Ranger Suarez? That guy has been Randy Johnson against the Braves.
This ridiculous. And he started off this season with a bang, too. So kind of slowed down of late.
That's a guy.
I would love to have Ranger here.
That guy would be – talk about going from zero to hero. That guy – that is one of the – go look at his numbers against the Braves.
Makes up for you striking out – Aaron Nola a couple years ago, getting him here. So.
Well, they're glad they didn't do that now. Have you seen him lately? Oh, my gosh. All right, 404-726-0929. Orne and I will dive into some college football coming up next. Can Georgia Tech get this thing done against Clemson? We'll let you know next.